Online Trading Academy is a leader in investing and stock trading education. Sign up for a class today and learn proven strategies on how to trade smarter. Text Curley, C-U-R-L-E-Y, to 57682 and register for a free workshop in Bellevue and other surrounding areas. Text Curley, C-U-R-L-E-Y, to 57682.
Got it. Thank you, Marissa. Tommy, get in here. The homeless people are in boats. Tom, get in here, Tommy! Oh, sorry, thank goodness you're here.
What do you expect?
There's a guy in a boat, and he's homeless, and he's tied up under the 520. Tommy, yeah, do something out here!
Practically waterlogged.
Oh, my God. Wow, big story yesterday. Here they come. It's like Dunkirk all over again, Tom. The homeless boat spotted under the 520.
I know. This one poor guy, I don't know who it is, hiding away, tucked away where nobody can see him unless you're a kayaker, a snooping kayaker.
Yeah. There was a story I looked in the Seattle Times in 2011. There was a guy that lived in a little rowboat with his dog.
Yeah?
Yeah, almost the same exact spot. And he had a little heater under there, little kind of a fire thing. And the why are you still playing the music in there, Andrew? We're into the show. The show has begun. You don't sense the momentum of news?
I didn't sense the momentum at all.
He senseless.
Funny kid in the other room.
Huh? I think he's learning from you.
How about that? You know, I was going to give you the 150 of my Above and Beyond award.
That's okay. I've already got a couple.
I'm going to give it to Patrick as a way of keeping him here so he's here for the rest of his life.
Of course. Right? That's a good choice.
All right. All right. So the story is, even though Andrew doesn't realize we've started the show.
Whoa. I'm only worth 150 for the rest of my life?
No, 150. It would be an installment.
It's a down payment.
Oh, it's the first of many.
Yes. All right.
Every time he wins an Above and Beyond
Tom,
award.
Momentum. All right, here we go.
Hey, I don't sense it either.
Okay, you know what? Screw it. Start over again. Play the music, and I'm diving in. Ursula, give me the last part.
Dun, 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 dun.
Got it! Here we go. Tommy, get in here. We got to start the show for real. All right, there's a boat.
What do you
boat.
Expect? We're practically waterlogged.
Woo! Tom, there's a boat that's under the bridge. Somebody do something quick. All right. Not now! Oh, man.
We're better off when Andrew isn't paying attention.
Okay, so that is the story. There's a boat under the bridge, and it has moved. They went back to take a look at it. The thing that makes it interesting is the reaction to the officials when they see a boat that's moored and the reaction that the police have when they see a tent on a sidewalk.
Maybe. I know that's the thrust of the discussion you're expected to have, but it took them a week to check it out. So I don't know that they're Johnny the Spot. He says, so when they went and checked it, the boat moved in the week since it was spotted. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. But, yeah, do they respond more quickly or more vociferously than when when you see a tent on the sidewalk? The answer here from the Seattle Police Department is that they see the Seattle waterways like freeways. Mm-hmm. Not side streets, but freeways, because you've got so much. You've got shipping lanes, and you've got Lake Union, the airport, as they call it, for the planes there and stuff. So it can get a bit crowded. And so they see that if anything is in the way, it could cause real, you know, collisions are a serious problem. So they compared it to getting pitching a tent in the on ramp or off ramp of a freeway, and so they respond a bit more with a bit more concern. However, they say this is really rare if this really is a homeless boat. Now, we don't know. It had a big blue tarp over it, so the assumption was maybe it's like homeless camping on a boat. We don't know who owns the boat or who was in the boat, but they say that they usually have to do what they have to deal with abandoned or derelict boats, boats that are just sort of floating out, and they pull them out of the waterways, and if they're really derelict, they go ahead and dispose of them. Mm-hmm. But anyway, this just is, it's one more wrinkle in the housing crisis or the homeless encampment business if there is somebody on a boat.
Okay, but so far, they haven't spotted another one, so taken over.
It's moved, and it hasn't, so there's no mm-hmm. of boats right now.
Got it. All right. As Ursula had said, that For the longest time, people always complained about the rain and the traffic. And now to the top of the list of things that people are crying about. 2,000 people were surveyed. They did it online, and then they also did it by phone. I'm always suspicious where they did it by cell phone, which costs a heck of a lot more for these surveys, or they did it by landline. They spoke, I think, in 3 or 4 different languages and asked the questions, and they found out that the number one thing that people are most upset about living here in the Seattle area is
the cost of living here.
Ah.
And so they say that it's true that everything is getting more expensive, but the primary hunch is that the cost, when they say cost of living, it's the cost of renting and the cost of buying homes in the area. And it is true. I mean, the median price for the Pacific Northwest region is something like $775,000. It's higher on the east side. And so it's the price. And the reason that's significant is they go back to 1993. So, mm-hmm. 20, 30 years ago, it had been traffic, and in 2003 it had been traffic, and so now traffic is not even the second most. By far, it's like 30% are concerned about cost of living, then it drops down to about 15% for homeless, and then like 12% for traffic, mm-hmm. In terms of the biggest concerns.
I say bully for the media, good job. By constantly having that on the front page of the Seattle Times, you have convinced the people that are making their mortgage payments every single month, most of them are, that their biggest concern is housing. The thing that affects them the most, is just in their daily, every single day, is the commute. I talked to somebody the other day, 2 hours, 2 hours on the way in,
yeah,
2 hours on the way out. And I said to the guy, 4 hours of your life every, he goes, that's on a good day. Mm-hmm. That's on a good day. So then you start to think about, okay, I said, what's a bad day? He goes, 6 hours. 6 hours, 5 days a week. Do the math, I can't. The thing is that that's a lot of time sitting in a car, Tom. Well,
yes, absolutely. But most people are not spending 6 hours.
No. What is the average commute still? Is it still 25 minutes, or is it going up to 30-some minutes?
I don't know what the average is.
I'm just giving you an example of one guy. But I'm saying what happens is, how many times in the last 6 months has the front page of the Seattle Times been, housing prices continue to soar, housing prices set new record?
John.
Tom, I'm just saying is that when you ask somebody their opinion of something, what they're telling you is that, hey, tell me the last thing you ate. They'll tell you the last thing you ate. What did you eat 5 days ago? They can't tell you that, or they might have had a better meal 5 days ago than what they just ate. The thing is that you continuously tell them, this is the problem, this is the problem, this is the problem. I would say of most of the 2,000 people that they surveyed.
This.
No, I don't believe it. Most of the 2,000 people they surveyed were, let's see, I'd like to know, have you missed a mortgage payment in the last 6 months? How has the high price of housing? Once you've got the house, you've got the house. The hard part is sell the house and find another house. That's the thing. But 2,000 people are concerned about the price of housing?
Well, I don't understand the purpose of your disputing this. Did you dispute it 30 years ago when traffic was the number one, and 15 years ago when traffic was the number one? I think have to go with what we got, and to blame the Seattle Times, nobody even
not
reads
blaming
the paper
them. No,
anymore.
Not blaming them.
No,
I'm just saying
the media coverage.
It's the effect of confirmation bias. It's confirmation bias.
And I would
that's what
argue that whatever the Seattle Times headline is has less impact on you than sitting in your car. I would think what did you last eat in your last meal? Most people commute, and most people if they have a bad commute, that would be uppermost on their mind because they don't buy a house that often. Now,
right.
It is true. The rent, if you rent, you pay that every month, and if it goes up every year, you're maybe more attuned to that. But I think your reasoning to
it's the confirmation
dislodge
bias.
This.
Confirmation bias. If you're going to buy
it's
a Honda.
Of your bias.
No. If you're going to buy a Honda, the next day you start to realize, you know what? Let's buy that Honda. The next day you start to realize, wow, look how many Hondas there are in the street. Everybody seems to have a Honda. But 48 hours earlier.
Confirmation bias, it's actually focused bias.
Yes.
Yeah. You're
we
aware
focus
of it.
Our attention because here's a perfect example. You know what we're doing right now? We're not stopping to check on the
prices.
Yes, we're stopping to check on the price of housing. No, we're checking traffic,
homeless
which is
boats?
The real problem. First of all, we'll ask Emery Martin, have you seen any homeless boats?
Okay.
You know, John, there's so much going on with traffic have time to focus on anything else. I'm trying to get you guys to where you need to be on time this morning.
We'll take that as a yes.
One battle at a time. So speaking of this terrible traffic, our lake bridges, we'll start with that. Just horrendous this morning. Westbound 520 taking you 50 minutes between Bellevue and Seattle. I-90 about a 40-minute drive. Now, some of this is due to this new lane configuration on I-90, so people have been scooching over to 520 instead. We had a much earlier stall on 520, but it just continues to wreak havoc. And all northbound lanes of East Marginal Way south between Lucille and Alaska are totally blocked right now, and this is due to a serious collision involving a semi. So this is just totally jammed. 509 northbound 99, northbound 5 also in rough shape. So I'm going to say go ahead and go with Airport Way. That looks like your best option into the city this morning. That's your Cairo Radio real-time traffic. I'm Emery Martin.
Thanks, Emery Martin. Appreciate it. Yesterday there was a bit of a problem. Was it on 2nd Avenue? How many people out there? 200 people that are protesting the fact that the Santar, by the way, Suncor, great stock, buy that
Tar
one.
Sands, by
Tar Sands, buy Suncor. SU, it trades on the, I think it's NASDAQ, and they are the ones that suck the oil out of the sand, and good stock to buy. They take the oil out of the sand, and then they refine it, and then they ship it, right, Tom, from Alberta right over to British Columbia, and then from there it gets onto container ships, and then off it goes.
No, well, tankers,
through the Straits of Juan de Fuca.
Yeah, that is why there's the local focus here. But what I, again, in the research about the protest, I didn't remember that British Columbia itself is against this.
Yes, they are.
It's the provincial government there is also protesting this particular arrangement for environmental reasons and the like, and these people made their position quite clear, and they were arrested for it very peaceably.
Yep.
25 women, were protesting inside the lobby at Russell Investments, protesting at Chase.
Yeah, and how has that affected anything at this point?
Well, they haven't brought So the Strait of Juan de Fuca is free of tankers.
I understand. Yeah, about that. Is it proven? Is the science there to back up? Because I saw in the Seattle Times that could possibly disrupt the orca pods, right? That if more ships through, do they have
the already dwindling southern resident orca pod?
Right, but do they have the evidence? Is it according to scientists or this or that? The way the writer wrote it, it seemed like it
says, and potentially endangering. I think that is one of the accusations that's being made about it. Uh-huh. And we don't have the scientific studies, if that's what you're asking for. But that's the
other accusation was that workers that go up there to work on the tar sands, are violent against indigenous women. Did you see that? That was the other one.
Well, yes. You know, this is, I didn't know if you're going to go there or not, but this, there was a movie called Wind River that was a very good movie a year and a half ago, and it dealt with indigenous women. There are a lot of indigenous women have gone missing and are murdered out in these areas. Yeah. The Wind River is in an Indian reservation in Wyoming, I think it is.
Mm-hmm.
But and I wasn't aware of the situation, and they say that a lot of this, and again, this happens in the movie, which doesn't make it true,
yeah, right.
But now I understand what the movie at least is picking up on, is they say that a lot of these people that go out in the middle of nowhere to work on these might be responsible for all these indigenous women's deaths and disappearances, which is one of the aspects, one of the themes of that particular a movie starring Elizabeth Olsen and Jeremy Renner.
Thank you, Tom. We talked yesterday about Chase is involved in the pension programs that the Seattle employees get an opportunity to enjoy when they retire, and how hard it is to sort of extract yourself when you have a political point of view, because you're it's like saying to a fish, how's the water? And the fish says, what do you mean, what's water? You're just around all around it all the time. It's okay. The vegan who yells at you about eating meat while they cinch another loop on their leather belt. The fact that tourism have, if you want to be a tourist, you got to watch out because you're creating carbon, Tom, and you might want to just stay at home.
Well, or travel slightly differently. But, yeah, this is a major international study, and it's always been understood that tourism is responsible for a carbon footprint of about 2.5% up to 3%. And now they've just done this huge study, and they say it's now up to 8%.
Yeah.
And what they acknowledge is that rich, wealthy travelers from wealthy countries to other wealthy countries are more responsible for the carbon footprint than realized, because all the infrastructure that has to develop for tourism ends up being energy the energy expenditure is pretty darn high. And so you have to ask yourself, how should you travel? This is one of the interesting things for me when I travel, because I still love traveling. But the idea is that I try not to stay in these big resorts and these big hotels. And it's like, that's what is the big energy waste. If you took public transport in the little towns and you just lived more like someone who lives there, like a citizen, then your carbon footprint wouldn't be that big. But most of us, when we go on vacation, we want to spend our money and we want to relax. So we want to have a nice resort with a big pool and all the creature comforts. And because of that, tourism, which is a lifeblood for a lot of countries, at the same time is having a big effect. And then the counter to that is they say the World Tourism Bureau, whatever, says, okay, we are doing our darndest to try to lower our energy consumption, and we've made some progress, and I think we can still do that. That you can still travel the world if you want to, and not be an ogre when it comes to energy consumption.
Yeah,
but right now it's a problem.
So it seems like when you get people like Leonardo DiCaprio going at us all the time about our carbon footprint and the amount of carbon. And then how big is his yacht? Is it over 110 feet?
I have no idea about
and
a yacht.
And I forget the private jet that he
sense.
Flies on as well, right? And the same thing with Al Gore. The thing, you were in this country, you're in this world, you can do what you can to reduce. There are places that I stay in that when you go to get into the room, you put the little card in the room, and then when you go to leave, you take the card out, and the lights turn off. You're like, okay, well, if that feels it makes everybody feel better that we've reduced some carbon, fine. Or you say, hey, rather than having this towel cleaned, I'll use the same towel, and that'll work out well. Or now some hotels will say, I'll tell you what, if you don't need your bed turned down and you don't need your room cleaned, then we'll let you go 3 days in there and we won't clean it, and that'll be okay. If it's okay with you, well, some hotels will even give you a discount. Yeah. Hey, if we don't have to clean your room, we'll give you $5 back or something. So then it's not somebody plugging in the vacuum cleaner or doing something else in order to cause more carbon to the world.
See, the problem is I think when people go on vacation, they like to forget that they're not rich and they're not pampered and they're not, and they want to act like they're rich and act like they're instead of saying, oh, well, you can live like your poor, sorry self in a foreign country just as well. That's not a lot of people's ideas of vacation. Maybe it ought to be.
Do you find that people leave the lights on in their hotel room where they would never leave their lights on in their house?
Yeah. I'm living like a king on the 54th floor.
I am aware of the fact that the hypocrisy, because I turn it off at home.
Yeah.
I yell at the kids to turn them off at home. And I realize I leave the hotel room. If they don't have that little key thing in the door, I do walk away and there's two lights left on and maybe the TV's on.
I already paid for this.
Yeah. It's like, I'm going to get my money's worth.
Exactly.
I'm going to use up a lot of electricity. All right. Fast break. Come back. We'll talk about the Attorney General. Oh, no. This guy was really big on the whole Me Too movement.
I guess it was.
And now it is Me Too.
That's
Me Too.
Right.
Yeah. I was spitting on women and slapping them and referring. What did he say to his black girlfriend? What did he want her to call him?
I don't know that she's black, John.
Oh, okay.
I think she might be Indian, given the name.
She was doing some role playing as well?
Yeah.
You know who's the happiest this whole story? Is Donald Trump.
Donald Trump
in 2013 tweeted out, we got Spitzer and we got Wiener. Wait till you see when we get the AG.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is 2013. This is long before he ran for
Look
president.
At that. He knew what he was talking about.
Yeah,
genius.
He runs right in those back. Circles, I'm afraid.
This Tom and Curly podcast is brought to you in part by Farrah.com. Sell your home without paying a listing commission. Farrah is a new way to sell your home. No listing commission and all the services, from an MLS listing to yard signs to pictures and more. Call Farrah at 1-800-571-FAIRA or go online to Farrah.com. Now, the Tom and Curly podcast.
Keel Mortgage. Thanks, Keel, for sponsoring the Tom and Curly Show. You know where to put your money. A lot of good people listening that may be in the market to buy a house that aren't complaining about traffic. They're just saying, you know what? Cost of a home? I need to have a good expert behind me. 1-888-778-KIEL. That's Keel Mortgage. You're outstanding. Bless you, Ursula. In the middle of a spot.
Thank you.
In the middle of a spot over here.
You're supposed to ignore these things.
CL53969. When Tom breaks wind, you think I ignore it? Keel Mortgage, thank you very much.
I love Keel Mortgage.
I do too.
Two of mine.
See that? Okay, thank you. Try not to sneeze in the middle of your spots.
Oh, makes for a better commercial.
True that, Tom. True that. I'll take anything.
You bet. You beg for the interruption.
She bats her eyes. I look over. All right. This is a shame. This guy was a real hero when it came to women fighting hard for women. And now you find out, no, he wasn't fighting hard for women. He's fighting women hard.
Right. This is unbelievable, this story. I mean, it's so... Again,
if it were in the movie
script, you right, know, no, this is bogus. Oh, I'm sure.
No way. With the attorney general, the guy that was the one cheered on because of bringing down Weinstein,
yeah.
That guy turns out to be some sort of sadist, drinking drug addict that beats women. No way. He loves women.
The thing is that this is the liberal equivalent of the preacher who rails against homosexuality,
right.
Or, you know, sexual perversion, and then himself is caught with a prostitute or in a, you know, I mean, it's the hypocrisy of this is amazing. Now, of course, we all have to say, just for the record, these are just alleged and he denies
absolutely.
Them. But even as Andrew Cuomo, the governor, says, that article, the New Yorker, Ronan Farrow and Jane Mayer are the ones who broke this. The New Yorker is doing unbelievable work in this arena. They were the ones who just won a Pulitzer Prize for the Harvey Weinstein, in effect, a journalistic takedown. And now it is so well, evidenced, I guess, is the best way to put about it, that he might not be guilty of a crime that we're aware of, but it certainly looks hellacious on the face of it.
I think the victims know that they can call Ronan Farrow and they can call Jane Mayer. And I think they know that the New Yorker will handle their allegations seriously.
Yes.
And do
delicately
the investigation.
And seriously, yes.
The question I always have is, really? No one knew this guy was doing this stuff for these years, and no one had any idea. I would say that it was a probably quiet, best-kept secret, just like Harvey Weinstein.
Oh, you think so? Okay, here's why I think not, but again, we're in the realm of speculation,
sure,
John,
sure.
So we don't
it's
have a problem with this. But these were in romantic relationships, long-term. I mean, they're like a year to two-year-long relationships.
Yeah.
I don't know how recently. By the way, his ex-wife, who says, I've known him for 35 years. There was no indication of anything like this kind of behavior with her, by the way. But that's sort of a secondary. What Harvey Weinstein was doing was sounding like he was preying on women who didn't know him from Adam.
Yeah.
And he was just, these are women, three of the four of them, I heard one of the reporters that did the story in The New Yorker, said they claimed to be in love with him and they were in long-ish term. I don't know how long a year, 2 year relationships are considered.
Most relationships nowadays last anywhere between 3 and 5 in the morning.
Okay.
All right, Jane.
I knew that was a bump. Anyway,
I can't. What? I can't do jokes. I can't do jokes
You gotta tell me to get the rim shot.
I can't do a joke every once in a while.
Unlike the New Yorker, you don't take this
Tom,
seriously.
So
yes.
No, I do
but
take
still,
it seriously.
Okay.
So you're right. So within the confines of a relationship, established relationship, but then they said that he started out. One of the accusers said he started out very caring and very loving, very nurturing. But then when he drank, and he would drink anywhere between 2 bottles of wine, and then he'd bring
like
a bottle of scotch
lots of
drinking and tranquilizers and drugs and stuff, then he became like a sadist. That's how she described him.
Okay, I didn't hear tranquilizers.
Yes, including tranquilizers.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, the idea is that all these accusations say came after drinking. Not that that's any excuse or permission
giving. A 63-year-old man drinking 2 bottles of wine and then a thing of scotch. You know who you blame on that?
No, who?
Pfizer, the creator of Viagra, because there's no physical way that guy's doing anything.
Okay.
Let's go to Jane Mayer. She tells MSNBC
New Yorker writer.
She's a New Yorker writer. She says the recent outing of the White House aide, and that was, of course, Rob Porter, pushed these women to speak out against the attorney general. By the way, who's a Democrat, by the way? Democrat.
It was really interesting watching this whole thing unfold, and I think part of it was the backdrop was the Me Too movement, but also really the allegations that came out about Rob Porter and domestic violence, the top White House aide who had to resign because of the pictures of a black eye that his wife got, and she said it was from him. And as these women who had dated Eric Schneiderman over the years watched all of these headlines and these stories unfolding, they felt they had some responsibility to speak up themselves. All of these women are supporters of Schneiderman. They were progressive feminists who were I would say at least three of them were, you know, sort of described themselves as having been in love with him. So they were big supporters of his, but they also were supporters of, you know, women's empowerment, and they felt tremendously conflicted.
Mm. Yeah, because maybe they did love him, and then how do you square that? That the guy beat you, slaps you. The one woman who's Indian American, she said that he would say, I'm going to call you my brown slave, and I want you to call me master. And she says in the article, he continued to hit me until I did that.
See, this is what the other thing I knew as soon as I saw this headline, you know, given the accusations and the source of the accusations coming from The New Yorker, that Eric Schneiderman was in trouble. But I think the clincher was when he had to tweet out. This is before Andrew Cuomo called for his resignation, before he did resign, mm-hmm. that he said these were consensual events and I was role playing. The fact that he's introducing role playing into this as somebody in the newsroom wisely cracked. Role-playing doesn't count if you don't let the people you are involved sexually with, don't let them know that they're involved in that role-playing as well. Mm-hmm. That, to me, sounds, in his mind, that's his legal justification for hitting these women because it was all part of role-playing. Right. You're going to be my property.
I'm going to play an abusive spouse. Yes. I'm going to play an abusive boyfriend.
Yes. And the idea, I mean, now the thing is, there may be worlds, you know, as Fifty Shades of Grey has pointed out, there can be a sadomasochistic relationship, again, where this kind of stuff might happen. Mm-hmm. But in those cases, there's always a safe word. And according to at least these four women, there was never, and this came out of the blue and was not part of any kind of role playing that they were aware of.
Yeah. More from Jane Mayer.
With the Attorney General taking such a prominent role in supervising the Weinstein case, which is, you know, one of the most high-profile sexual harassment cases in recent history, they just felt the hypocrisy became kind of untenable, and they began to reach out to each other and form an alliance.
Yeah, how about that? If you see him constantly in front of the camera because he loved the cameras. He sued Donald Trump like three or four times, and he's been on.
I think it's like 100. There have been 100 suits against the federal government. He is the attorney general who, you know, you're
no,
always.
No, I'm saying personally, Trump organization and Donald Trump.
Yeah, okay.
Number of suits. Big high profile suits.
That's right. Well, in fact, you know, you're always kidding Bob Ferguson for the number of suits. Eric Schneiderman was the leader of that. He was sort of like the attorney general of the highest prominence who went after the Trump administration for all sorts of things, including this whole sexual business. By the way, because of what happened with Weinstein, you remember that the Manhattan district attorney was Cyrus Vance. He decided not to press charges against Harvey Weinstein. Mm-hmm. So Schneiderman was investigating why Cyrus Vance did not investigate or did not go after Weinstein. Now, guess what's happening? Mm. Cyrus Vance is investigating Schneiderman for improprieties.
Go.
So there is this this round robin effect going on in inside New York City.
One of his girlfriends said that Schneiderman mocked her for her political activism. She said she planned on attending a gun control event. He called the protesters, which includes Sandy Hook elementary school parents, as losers. He says, go ahead, if it makes you feel better, to do little political things. There you go. There's a guy. By the way, he has said, I'm going to step down because this is a distraction, but I deny all these charges against me.
That's right. Yeah, right. That he says nothing.
I was role-playing.
No violence, and everything was consensual. That he would
I was
not
playing
cross
Mike
that
Tyson.
Line.
Yes. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Tina Sorensen, General Sales Manager for Cairo Radio. When Tom and Curly fans miss their favorite show, they pull it up on demand. Maybe you should advertise here. Make sure you're reaching your customers anywhere they listen. Give me a call and I'll help you out. 206-726-6819.
All right. Fences make good neighbors. Is that what it was? Is that famous? Sometimes the fence needs to be high enough to block the window. Do you feel any sort of obligation when your neighbor is walking around nude or semi-nude that you would tell them, or what actions would you take?
So this actually happened to me. We had a neighbor who whose shower was, you know, the shower window. And I think that he was unaware. This was like 20 years ago,
right,
unaware that we could see more than we wanted to. And so we told him,
okay,
and he adjusted it, and now there's a wall there. He,
good.
So it was a very neighborly thing, and it was
good.
Handled properly.
Well, a young couple was walking around, and then they got a note from their neighbor. They went on television to talk about the note and what the neighbor's problem is with them.
It was quite a shock, really, because if we didn't think about it, it's not as if, you know, we're not dancing at the window naked, and you're just going about your general life.
Yeah.
I think if they had have just come to the door and knocked on the door and said, look, you've got a privacy issue, we probably would have taken it a bit more seriously.
Yeah.
But like you say, the note is really rude, it so... is. I think it just puts us to say we're not going to change much.
So you're not exhibitionist then? I mean, it's you say you're not dancing in front of the window. You're not wanting to be seen.
No, not at all.
No, yeah. The note was: would you please close your blinds when something rather dressed or undressing? Or sick of seeing your big, what was that,
bum?
Big bum and big boobs and little willy, as we report you both. For indecent exposure, your neighbors.
Yeah.
There you go.
So they were outraged. And they are a very... They want to establish that they're not exhibitionists.
Yeah,
unlike some people I know.
Well, I came in, I went to the gym this morning, and
yeah.
We're in a meeting. I'm not going to go in the bathroom and change.
Got a fun 3 hours.
So then right next to our desk,
there's
a window, and
window.
Brock and Salk do their show. So their show starts today, and just while their show's starting, I happen to be changing.
Yes.
Got a fun 3 hours planned for all of you. Yeah, it's an odd morning when John Curley takes off his shirt right outside your window as you're starting your show.
How much growth hormone is that guy?
Is that really a weird day, or is that just an average day?
He's now flexing. He's actually pretty ripped. I'll give John some credit for like a 60-year-old man or whatever.
He's in great shape.
He's in really good shape.
Kind of ripped.
No, he's ripped.
He is real ripped.
And now he's zipping up his... Okay,
yeah,
anyway. All right. Good morning, Brock. Sorry about that. Sorry for the distraction, everybody.
How much growth hormone are you on, Curly?
And in case you're thinking that's like radio exaggeration, no, John literally was changing in the middle of the newsroom. Took his pants off.
Yes.
Took his shirt off.
Yes.
And,
but I do pants off first, and then I put shorts. I took shorts off, put pants on, and then I don't go totally nude. I'm not like my boxers or
that's
something
true.
Like that. Yeah, we're not totally nude.
I was going to say right. No. Yeah.
I just want to say, John, I really appreciate the importance that you put out our pre-show meetings.
Yeah.
So much so that you couldn't take the time to go change in the bathroom, because God knows you never show up late.
Let me ask you this. Have you ever seen anybody like in a pair of shorts and a bathing suit?
Yeah.
Bathing suit. Okay.
Yeah.
So it's okay there. But like I'm standing there in the office, I can't be in a pair of shorts.
Well, when you take your pants off.
Oh, I'm near a body of water so I can have my shirt off.
So stupid.
I hate it. It's the hypocrisy. That's what it is.
Oh, yeah.
No, it
that's
is.
It. Here, let me take off my shirt.
Go ahead and take your shirt off. I don't care.
Oh, well, the idea is that you are an exhibitionist. Now, I have no problem with that because I know you and I put up with you.
Right.
But a lot of people might find it. I think that this woman.
Look away.
Man, yeah,
look away. Look away. Sock.
Try it.
Try it. I'm sorry if you have the same sort of stirrings that you had when you were at summer camp when you were in seventh grade. The kid
you're
in the
not
butt next to you.
That's the whole point, John.
Yeah,
you're not
stirrings.
Sorry.
You got his natural stirrings going. Yeah. Sorry, Sock. Sorry about that.
But why you walked all the way downstairs undressed and
I
then walked back up?
Because there's people downstairs that want to see.
Yeah, Cena, that's right. Who needs a camera when you're parading it around all
when
day?
I start to put on a few pounds and kind of let myself go like you, I won't do that.
Yeah.
But I look good right now.
Yeah, that's right. Thank you, growth hormones.
Yeah, no, I don't want growth hormones.
I heard it from
that's Brock. He's so jealous.
And you're so proud.
Salk needs to do some serious soul searching.